This is Authors Alcove, where writers learn from writers. Readers get the inside scoop, and everyone learns something. An episode comes out every Wednesday where writers share their latest work, every other Tuesday where us writers get taught by such experts as editors, book cover artists, and marketing execs, and beyond. So grab a cup of coffee, and let's dive into our next book. Welcome to Authors Alcove. I am your host, Agnes Wolf. Today, I have indie Canadian epic and urban fantasy author, Krista Walsh. She lives with her artist husband. He makes monster heads. Her toddler, she loves monster heads. And her epileptic blue healer, he is a monster. When she is not writing about magic, mystery, her found family, and dragons, just like me, she usually reads books about magic, mystery, found family, and dragons, or plays video games involving the same. Her 20th book, maybe her 21st, she's lost count because she's just a phenomenal writer, is Fire of the Sorceress, and it will be coming out on February 29th, which I thought was amazing because that only comes around once every 4 years, which is the first in the Immortal Sorceress book series. Its sequel, Fear of the Sorceress, will be coming out on March 28th. And then there is also a prequel, correct?
There is.
And you plan on publishing even more in succession. Is that correct? How many total?
There are 5 books in the main series, the companion novella that's already out, and then the prequel. So it'll be a full 7 book series.
Nice.
And they're all prepped and ready to go. And it's going to be a busy first half of the year.
Nice. A lot of marketing. Well, thank you for joining me today. Do you mind just sharing a little bit about yourself and what started you on this writing journey?
Absolutely. I have been writing from the time I could hold a pen. And I actually have photographic evidence of this, of me at about what my daughter's age is now, pen in hand, scribbling all over, you know, a book. I have notebooks from when I was 8 years old, 12 years old, of basically portal fantasy, kids crossing over to realize that they're princes and princesses in a whole other world. And it just kind of gripped me. I love telling stories. I love weaving magic into the world. And I first started really writing novels throughout university, but my first one was Evensong back in 2013, which was a full-on portal fantasy with dragons, and that launched me into the indie path. I was querying it to go trad, and a friend of mine who'd already kind of started down the indie path was like, well, why don't you just give it a try? You can always step back, you can always keep querying it. And he walked me through every single step of the way. And I have not looked back since then. And I've explored kind of the mystery side. So that's what kind of brought me more into the urban fantasy. So I started with epic, moved into the urban. And now I'm just completely wrapped up in all of that. So my romance themes are getting a bit heavier. But for the most part, the magic and found family are, and often dragons, are just very, very much who I am and what I love and what my happy place is.
I would say the exact same for myself. Do you mind just sharing a little bit about the basic plot without giving away any spoilers of this most current series?
Absolutely. So this one is, it's seen a lot of iterations, but the foundations have always been the same. So Kat Palin is an immortal sorceress through no fault of her own. She was turned in 1147 when a ritual went wrong, and it bound her to Emmerich, who is a servant of death. Essentially a grim reaper, but he doesn't like that term. And so now we're in the present, and she has sworn to protect the balance between magical and mundane. So every book has its own story, its own threat, and she's working with a man that she hates, who's a human soldier, who's a thrall to a vampire, who is the vampire's her best friend, her housekeeper, and her son Reese, who's a psychic, and a few witches that get thrown in there as well. But it's at its heart, it is a love story between Kat and Emmerich, which is kind of sort of a bit of a forbidden love, and how they're working out those issues while being faced with her past, which keeps coming to kick her in the butt.
Since you have written so many books, I think you've probably have perfected your writing process by now. But would you consider yourself a plotter or a pantser?
I am very solidly a planter. I am a huge advocate of specifically the Save the Cat beats. It's my starting foundation of every single book that I write. If I know exactly what those kind of pivot points are, I can write around it. But I love the exploration process. I often wind up in these situations that I have A, no idea how to get myself out of, but also interactions and dialogue that are far more authentic than when I try to outline every single tiny little aspect of it. So it's definitely a blend of the two.
I think everybody has a little bit of a blend, but I think we tend to fall one way or the other. I know that myself, like I had plotted out my entire current work in progress, and characters end up needing to do other things, or they end up doing other things, and I wasn't planning on, and yet they still hit the main points. And so I realized that I'm probably a little bit more of a pantser than I thought I would be, because I realized that, they're to get from this point to this point, sometimes when I'm plotting it out, I just forget that something else needs to happen. What does your writing process look like?
It changes with every single book. I have a really bad habit. At the moment, I have seven active manuscripts. Some of them are planned for my Immortal Sorceress series. I knew that I was going to be writing those, and so those were a bit more structured in terms of writing process. So I knew, like, I had my outline ready, I had my like character sheets kind of ready, and I was able to go into them, sit down, draft, etc. Whereas I also like having a side project, something that, because I write in my spare time, right? Like it's a hobby as well as a job, as well as a passion. So it's like, okay, well, I want something that's in the evening I can work on that's zero pressure, no deadlines, no marketing involved with it, just having some fun. And those are purely pantsed. And I have a lot of fun with them. One of them that started as a purely pantsed project is now my whole 2025 series launcher. And so that's been a lot of fun. So it definitely it keeps evolving, it keeps changing. But in terms of like the actual from first draft to publication, I've fallen into the groove of first draft, a whole bunch of passes, and I send it to my crit partner, who is just the most amazing human being, patient and willing to tear me to pieces, and in a loving way. And I couldn't publish anything without her eyes on it first. More passes, professional editor, more passes, beta readers, more passes, ARC readers, proofreads out.
So, how many beta readers do you usually have?
Three readers, like, and then two or three authors, like of my author friends.
Around five or six
Yeah.
total.
My alpha readers actually have kind of expanded to two, like my crit partner and if I can get another one in there, I will. Both of them are also authors because no one understands story structure as well as like a really, really good other author. So to help me kind of make sure that my pacing is good and my tension is good, I like having another professional eye on it. I like having the split between the like with the reader focus for the betas because that's the last people that are going out before the arc. So it's like what engages you? And but yeah, like I don't want too many because it's still my book and I'm not going to
Right.
rewrite it for 15 other people, but if I can get it, see trends across two or three readers, I find that very, very helpful for my confidence, if nothing else.
Definitely. So you actually went through multiple title changes. What were some of the things that you considered, and why did you change your mind?
Yeah, the original title for it was Playing with Fire, which I liked but was very, very overused. Used in across genres. Like I think there was a hockey player wrote his biography with that title, so like it wouldn't have stood out. The second one was Bond of Fire, but that was too shifter suggestive as opposed to magic. So Fire of the Sorceress was very much a because as I'm learning, titles are a very marketing focused thing. So it very much gets to the point, and I like it, and I like the flow of it. So each title is something of the sorceress. So the Fear of the Sorceress is book two. The prequel is Power of the Sorceress. And that is, if you read Katten Emmerich and you love them and you want to know where she starts, it is her beginning. It is there. The prequel is their beginning back in the 12th century into the early 13th century, which has been a lot of fun to write in the research and everything. But yeah, so that's kind of the evolution of that. And I like it. So like the original titles, book one was Playing with Fire, book two was Bitter Cold, and book three was When Lightning Strikes. And I got stuck on that because I didn't know where to go from there. So this one works a lot better because now if I ever want to write more books, I can write as many books as I want with these titles.
You mentioned that you researched a little bit for the 12th and 13th century. What did you do your research and what drew you to write this particular series?
Do you know, it was so long ago now that I don't know why I chose that particular era to start it in, but even from the very first iteration, it was 1147. So book two was a mix between present and the sack of Béziers during the Albigensian Crusade. So I kind of went, what happens before that, which is basically just a whole bunch of mountains and hillsides in Ambleside in England. So the research was a lot of what would the houses be made of? What would the food have been? What would the clothes have been made out of? And it was very, very fun, especially as I got into the book two with the more historical stuff and the crusade against the Cathars and everything. It was just really, really, really interesting.
So is it set in our world, but with magic, or is it set in a different world?
Set in our world with magic.
I like that. I like that because then it's a little bit more relatable. Not only did you go through title changes, but you also went through some draft changes. Why do you think it changed so much?
My experience, for one thing, like in terms of my voice, my style and everything, and my knowledge of things like tropes and what readers actually want to read. And I know that it can be done to write a book that's set half in the present, half in the future, but it was making the word count really cumbersome and the pacing was increasingly tricky. I still love the original draft and I still have a copy of the original draft, but I feel like this one is a bit more accessible and a bit of a lighter read. The main thing that changed though was the romance aspect of it, because it was always important. It was always a key thing, but it was only when I was working on this latest iteration that I realized how much this is a love story first and foremost. It highlighted where the relationships should be focused. It was only then that it finally set. I have the first drafts of book one, book two, and half of book three, and I just got stuck back in 2009. I had no idea where. I knew what was supposed to happen in four and five, but not how and not quite why. As soon as I realized what the focus of the story was, four and five wrote themselves. And they're probably my favorites of the series.
So you realize that this is more of a romance. Are your other novels more of a romance? Or was this the first time where you really focused on that romantic aspect?
This would be the first one. I've always had like a bit of a romantic subplot. My epic fantasy, it's very, very light. It's still there, but it's very subplot. My other urban fantasy, which is my Dark Descendants series, each one has a romance to it, but again, pretty subplot, pretty tame. But this one is like the first time I've really embraced it and I've had fun with it and I've fallen in love with it. It'll be tricky for me to go back and tone the romance back after this.
That makes a lot of sense. So you mentioned that even though the title had changed, the plot had changed, but your characters never really changed. Could you describe what your characters were like and why you think that they stayed true to themselves?
I'm very much a character-driven author. Plot obviously is key and it's important, but plot really isn't anything if you're not rooting for the characters, and therefore the characters have to be authentic and they have to be genuine. So I think the reason that they stayed the same was because they were already just who they were. They've obviously grown, but at their heart. So you have Kat, who starts the series very tired. She's been around for almost 1,000 years. She can't be with Emmerich because of reasons. And so she's just really, really depressed. And the only kind of constant that she has in her life is Adrian, who's 2,000-year-old vampire, who's also kind of at a point where he's just enjoying his life. And so she has to kind of come out of that funk, and that is her big growth aspect. But she's a good person. She's dealing with a lot of guilt, a lot of grief over the death of her family 800 years ago that she still hasn't gotten over yet. And I feel like that in itself is just really relatable for people who are stuck with regrets that they can't get past, or trying to start from scratch, essentially. And then you have Rhys, who's 18 years old. He's just coming into his psychic abilities, has no idea what he's doing with them. Hero worships Kat, and he is very much just this golden retriever energy, the sunshine to her kind of doldrums. Barrett, Adrian's human thrall, and Kat hates him, and Barrett hates Kat. And so you have this delicious frenemy banter, and they are just always at loggerheads, much to everyone else's amusement, because they can't be in the same room without being spitting cats at each other. It's one of my favorite aspects to write. And so he's a soldier, he hates magic, he hates everything involved with magic except for Adrian, and he's being thrown into helping Kat with all of her problems, her mysteries and whatnot. And then you have Poppy, who's this necromancer, very ambitious necromancer, who's big into big, vibrant colors and loves flirting with Kat, but knows that Kat has basically sworn to kill her as she steps out of line. So it's just the dynamic of every single one of them was so true and so fun and so right in the gut. You know what I mean? Like I followed it, I stuck with it. And so when I came back to this draft, I'm like, okay, well, who needs to change? And I'm like, honestly, like they're a solid cast. So it was just a matter of, with everything I've learned as an author, okay, so I can now improve the plot and see what kind of trouble I can get them into, but the characters themselves are just like, go have fun. You're set.
It's kind of funny with my current work in progress. I have had the characters since I was in college, which was 20 years ago. I just didn't have a story for them until my second daughter was born, which was 7 years ago. And I finally came up with a plot. But, then I had twins after that and was homeschooling. So I was just so busy. And I'm just now finally starting to write that plot. But you have published many books, so you are more familiar with the publishing process and the marketing process. What are some things that you have done that help your books get noticed by other people?
Constant work in progress. If I can say that there is something that I need to focus on and improve, it is definitely on the marketing side of it. But I am surrounded by amazing indie authors, specifically amazing urban fantasy authors right now that are just helping me learn that and brush some of that off. Like when I first started with Evensong in 2013, the landscape of indie publishing was incredibly different. And by the time I got the third book out in that trilogy in 2015, it was soaring. It was doing really, really well. And then everything kind of changed. And I was working a day job at that time. And so I didn't have a lot of time to focus on what those changes were. And I kind of watched it all backslide into obscurity again, which was disheartening and discouraging. But obviously I did not give up, and it's a constant learning of what's there. So I think the top thing that I have learned is that you need a team, you need a circle. And through having good advice and shared experiences, it's a lot easier to stay on top of the changes that happen in this industry, which makes it then easier to learn what's going to work for marketing. So things like social media promotions, or if you like to play with things like Facebook ads or BookBub ads, which at the moment I'm not good at them. But, building up my newsletter again after letting it kind of lapse for a while just because I was busy having a life. But that has been like a very, very key one. And I love my newsletter subscribers, and I love engaging with them and getting their emails and replying to them. My Facebook group, my page, but also like specifically my group, they're fantastic, a great support on top of everything else. And it's just, for me, connection is 100% the key, because if you have readers who love your books, they're going to be more likely to tell other people to go out and read them. And that has done a lot more for me in my marketing than me trying to go to people and say, hey, this is why you should read my book. So I also am a huge fan of live events. I adore book markets and Comic-Con, and they are the highlights of my year.
How do you get into some of those live events?
Luck for some of them. Like for I haven't really stepped too far outside of Ottawa yet, but I've done Ottawa Comic Con for the last couple of years, and it was definitely just timing on that one that I got in. And now once I'm in, once you're in, you're kind of like, I don't want to say set, but your chances increase because you can be among the first to apply again. But other markets too, like keeping an ear out again. Having that network of authors, of people in your area who know what the markets are, and not all of them will fit for books. Unfortunately, it's kind of a bit of a crapshoot sometimes of whether if the market is the people who will actually read what you're writing, but still worth it, and it's still fun to just go out and meet people, shake hands, hand out cards, let people see the covers and get interested in them. But even, yeah, like local craft shows, even it's still a table and it's still out. You might not sell, but a lot of them, the tables aren't that expensive. So it's an excuse just to go out and spend a day and see what everyone else is buying, buy a lot of food, and then you come back and you can just, have people give your books the side eye and then maybe saunter over and ask you a few questions about them.
I didn't think about craft shows, but I used to go to them all the time when I was little because my mom did. And I definitely, if I would have saw a book, I would probably would have gone up to it just because that is who I am. I'm a reader and I'm a writer through and through. But you mentioned, and I think this is so true, no matter what you are working towards, that to have success, you have to have a team of people, whether it be a team of people cheering you on or a team of people that help you become better or just help you with the side things like editing, reading, and stuff like that. Where do you meet your urban fantasy people that you're able to connect with?
Often fluke. My current group right now that I just absolutely adore. I don't think I'd be publishing this series right now if it weren't for them kind of helping me through it and encouraging me on it. That was just kind of a fluke that happened because one of them was setting up an author promo over a year ago, a year and a half ago or so now, and invited me to be a part of it. Said yes, and then it just kind of evolved into something, frankly, just magical. Facebook groups, though. So there's fans of indie urban fantasy and fans of urban fantasy are both groups that have readers and authors in them. Urban Fantasy Writers is another Facebook group. So like you go and you have authors and it's just a matter of like it's the same networking that you do in person, but from the ease of your couch while you're still wearing your pajamas. It's wonderful modern networking. And yeah, again, just making those connections. And it's not always quick. And goodness knows you wind up with a lot of people you don't click with before you find the people that you do click with. That's just, the nature of life, really. Unfortunately, it's a matter of putting your foot out there and saying yes to opportunities. And that can be really, really scary and really, really daunting. But when it pays off, it really pays off. And you wind up with people that just get you on a level that a lot of others don't.
You said that you're both an urban fantasy writer and an epic fantasy writer. For those that don't know the difference, which is funny because I asked you, like, is this that an R, and you had already said it was an urban fantasy, but what's the difference between urban fantasy and epic fantasy?
Broadly, I think scope. Obviously, there are so many genres and subgenres of everything. In my mind, epic is set not in our world with broader ranges. Think Lord of the Rings. So, a lot of bigger setting, usually higher stakes, not always, but often. It's where you can throw in more dragons. And whereas urban is set in our world with the fantasy element, and I find usually has some kind of suspense or mystery aspect to it. Frankly, I mean, often so does the epic. The more I play with these tropes and these genres, I realize how much they overlap. And then it comes down more to just vibe than anything else. So I think definitely scope. Urban fantasy usually is like in one city, whereas epic fantasy can span multiple cities and multiple, because is it really epic if you're not traipsing across the mountains for 3 weeks? Come on.
True. Well, I just want to thank you so much for being part of here, but I am going to ask a question that I ask everybody. And you being more seasoned author probably have different advice than somebody who may have only published one book. What is one piece of advice you would give to a not yet published author?
Persevere. This is a hard job. Like, even with the best, biggest support group, it is hard sometimes to drag yourself to your computer every day and write and edit and put yourself out there and have reviewers tear it through the mud, have readers be lackluster about it, be rejected if you're doing like the trad publishing route, and or have your book go out there to crickets. And even though like everyone's saying it's great, it's not gaining traction and you're left earning pennies on something that you put so many years or so much money into producing, and it can be so hard, but you're not going to get anywhere if you give up. So as much as it's hard, find one reason, find one thing that you love that still sparks that passion that keeps you going with it. And chase that thing and follow it and keep coming back to it. And I say this often and I often get looks. When you need to, quit. I have quit this job so many times. And for me, it's always a personal test. And it's if I can quit and I can throw everything and just say, you know what, I'm done and walk away, the day that I don't come back to it is the day that means that I'm actually finished with it. But if you're writing, it's not because it's something that you're choosing to do. It's something that you really want to do. So chances are, if you quit, give yourself that break, take that pressure off. Chances are, give it a few days, give it a few weeks, and you're going to come back to it, and you're going to go in with a bit more of a refreshed drive to keep going after what it is that you want.
It seems like writers, more than any other career, is you are born a writer. It's not just something that you choose. It's something that is part of who you are, I feel like. But anyway, thank you so much for being on here, Krista. I really do appreciate it. I also want to thank my listeners. If you're interested in her newest series, you can find the links in the show notes or visit her website. If this episode resonated with you, you might also enjoy my episode with Anna Michelle, who wrote urban fiction, Long Live the Queen, or Shel Cypress's interview, who wrote a romantic fantasy, Unmasking the Curse. Again, today I spoke with Krista Walsh. Her books are Fire of the Sorceress and Fear of the Sorceress, with more to come. Her website is KristaWalshAuthor.com. And again, thank you,
Krista. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of Authors Alcove. We will be back next week on Wednesday, where we will have a writer share yet another piece of work. Also, every other Tuesday, we do learn from experts such as editors, marketing execs, book cover artists, illustrators, and more. If you are interested in being a guest on our show, feel free to go to authorsalcove.com, go to the podcast tab, and then click on Be a Guest. If you're looking for a healed heart, hop on over to our sister podcast, Strength, Love, and Healing with Authors Alcove. You can find that on Spotify and the Apple Podcast. Thank you so much for listening today. Have a great day.